Welcome to the Doctors Investing Group podcast. This is episode number 68. Okay, guys, welcome back to the podcast. We are very excited to have Neil Bawa come on the show here today. Before we get started, a quick disclaimer, this is not an offer or a sale of securities. No due diligence was performed, and this is not a recommendation to purchase a specific security. So for education only, we would love to welcome him onto the show. Okay, welcome back to the Doctors Investing Group podcast. We've got a very special guest today. We have Neil Bawa. Neil is the founder and CEO of Grow Capitus. They are a multifamily operator with over $1 billion in assets under management. They have properties in Idaho, Utah, Arizona, Texas, and the Southeast markets as well, the Carolinas, Florida. So we are very lucky to have him on today to give us his view of multifamily in 2022. So Neil Bawa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show. I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
Can you tell us your background first and maybe how you got into real estate investing? Kind of give us your background.
Yeah, I'm a recovering technologist. So the degree is in computer science. The specialty is in data science. And I basically, like many others that have been on your show, you know, come from that world of technology initially. And what I found was that I started investing in real estate, you know, to grow my own wealth, you know, because my technology company was doing well. And I discovered that my data science techniques actually apply a lot better to real estate than they were applying to technology, because I'd apply data science to technology and I'd get like a 6 month or 12 month advantage. When I would apply it to real estate, I would get a 3 to 5 year advantage over all the other investors. And so a reason for that is the number of data scientists in real estate is very, very small. So maybe 1 out of 1,000 operators uses data science the way that we do. So I was like, this is something that I should look into. So initially I just started doing it for fun and did it for fun for years and, you know, had some people following me, even though they knew that I wasn't really a real estate guy. And then over a very long time, it sort of happened that I transitioned over. I sold my technology company. So I have to say, I enjoy the use of data science far more in real estate than I did when I was back in technology.
Can you define that for us? What is data science and how does that apply to an asset like multifamily investing?
Absolutely. I think so data science is simply the study of large volumes of numbers. So what you do is you say, what's my end goal? And in this case, my end goal was the creation of the maximum amount of profit with the minimal amount of, you know, work, right? So essentially what you're doing is you're looking at an X and Y and you're saying, I want to put less work in and I want to create more profit, right? So that's my input in data science. Then I say, okay, what are my variables? What are the things that move the needle on both of these things that I want to do? I want to work less and I want to create more profit. And so you do research using a, you know, set of software and you come up with the variables that appear to be impacting it the most. And then you have the data set. You say, okay, so what data do I need to take my assumptions, to experiment on, to say that whatever conclusions I've come to hold up over a large number of places, a large amount of time, right? So you have to create a data set. And so I'm going to give you an example of that just to make it easy, right? So in real estate, we find that the greatest amount of profit is not created through cash flow, okay? And cash flow obviously is humongously important to all of us. We don't go into projects that don't have cash flow. But what we found was over 85% of the total amount of profit that people have made in the last 20 years in real estate has been through appreciation, right? And so it became our goal to find properties that would cash flow, because otherwise our investors would not invest, so we wouldn't be able to buy them anyway. But look for that pop, look for that greater appreciation. And as I started doing this research, and I'll tell you the backstory on that if you have time, I realized that there were 5 things that were impacting that back-end cash flow the most. And I sort of became an expert in those 5. And that's basically the household income, right, of a particular area, the population growth, the job growth, the crime or reduction thereof, right? And the 5th one I'm blanking on for the moment, it'll come back to me in a minute. And home price growth, right? So how quickly were home prices growing, even though I'm in multifamily, right? So multifamily or apartments basically is the market where you aggregate these together. Is either it's a, you know, big single block property, or these days it's something new, something different called build to rent, which is low density. So it could be townhomes, which are the most popular these days, or single family homes, but they're inside a large community. So you've got a centralized manager and centralized clubhouse. You're leasing from one place. You don't have like one single family all over the city. So that centralization gives you all of the benefits of multifamily, but it still gives you the overall higher attraction of single family, right? So you get both of those together. That's called built to rent. And so when I started applying these five metrics, now we have 24 different metrics, but these five are still the highest weighted, right? Job growth, home price growth, income growth, crime reduction. We found there was a vast difference in profit, in back-end profit. And the reason why most people weren't looking at this was they were still making profit without any of this work. Real estate is a profitable venture. You know, you make more money in real estate than you do in the stock market on average, right? So you look at the averages on both sides, real estate is above. So a lot of people, they're very happy with their real estate performance, not understanding that there are many levels above them through the use of data science. And that's what I do. I basically, I'm a geek, I'm a dork, I'm a nerd. I have lots of geeks and dorks and nerds following me because I use data science, and I have examples of the astonishing kind of profits that you can create when you use data science. And the other thing that I do is I often do not invest in superstar cities. My data science tells me that the profits to be made are in smaller markets, which grow as a percentage, often 2x, 3x, or even 10x faster than the larger cities that most people invest in.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah, as physicians, we tend to really latch on to data. We like the raw numbers. We understand the perils of making assumptions and painting with too broad of a brush. So let's talk about raw data. Where would you find it? I mean, where would you go find out those individual, you know, data points? Is that widely available?
Absolutely, it is. Luckily, all of the data that anyone needs to be data-driven. So let's say Tom said, I want to use Neil's data science approach to all of my future real estate investing, right? So do I need to give Neil money? The answer is no. I mean, you know, I have a couple hundred doctors that are clients of mine, but absolutely not required. Anyone should be able to use data science. And we are so lucky in real estate. Most investing areas, you can never get the data for free. And in many of them, you can't even get it at all, right? But with real estate, we're highly blessed that the same data that I'm using is actually available. Most people just don't know the weightages. Like, how do you, you know, take the data and how do you use it, right? That's what's needed. So I'll give you the hard answer and the easy answer, right? The easy one is simply this. We publish a free course called Location Magic. And this is a one-hour course that anyone can take. There's no cost. There's no subscription. There's nothing at all, right? You go in, you take the course. And the course teaches you about five metrics. And then it teaches you where to find them. Where do you find each metric? What is the appropriate metric? What's a good number? What's a bad number, right? For each one of these five metrics. What's a good number? Let's say Tom lives near a tiny little town. And he wants to see, how does this town compare with Miami, Phoenix, or Austin, right? Is it better? Is it worse, right? You should be able to find data on that town using, you know, the information that we provide in the course. Very straightforward. You should be able to find the five metrics on any city in America. There's about 3,300 cities currently available that data is available on in less than 5 minutes. If it's taking more than 5 minutes, you're doing something wrong. And that's what that Location Magic course teaches you. And then it tells you what is an appropriate number. Like for job growth, what is a good number? The short answer is 2.1, 2.2% is basically the number you're looking for in the US, because those are superstar cities, right? Job growth in the US is less than 1% at this point in time. So you want to look for cities that are significantly above. So we tell you what those thresholds are. And then we give you an Excel spreadsheet at the end of it. And then we say, once in a year, if you're lazy, in February, come into our website and we'll give you the updated numbers. Because as, for example, US population growth has been slowing for the last decade, which means that the numbers that I was giving people 10 years ago no longer work, right? So because population growth is slowing, so my new number is going to be a little bit smaller than the previous number. So once in a year, we publish basically updated numbers. COVID affected a lot of our numbers, especially home price growth got affected because of COVID. You know, home prices shot up, so we had to change our numbers. So we make that change on our website once in a year and we give it away. As I said, there's no subscription. I'm very obsessed with one thing. the use of data science to create profits. I'm obsessed with that. And I want as many people in the world to be able to get to it. So our goal is to be like the Wikipedia of real estate data science. And currently we have about 50,000 investors using our method, and only 800 of those are investing with us. So that's 1.6%. And I'm really, really happy with that 1.6%, right? Our challenge, as you can imagine today, is we can't find enough properties, right? Money is really easy to find today. Properties are really hard to find.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the conundrum that all investors are facing in 2022. So is this a matter of you weight each subject and then you go out and you find the data, and then using that weighting, you can come up with a ranking for every single town in America? Is that like, how do you essentially end up with a list like, oh, actually the top 50 based on our weightings, these are the places? Is that what happens?
Absolutely. So the answer is many of the people that have taken this course, and one of the I'll tell you where exactly to take the course. The most updated version is on a website that I own called multifamilyu.com, where the U stands for university. So multifamily followed by U.com. So you can get the most recent version. But there's 10,000 people right now taking it on Udemy, which is a very famous website, Udemy. It's, you know, a website where people host their courses. And so many of those students have actually gone through this process. I myself have, you know, we have about 3,300 cities on our internal list, but our internal list has other secret sauces where we pay for the data. But I can tell you, over 90% of the time, it ends up being the same cities. So the free course has over a 90, I'd say maybe a 93, 94% correlation with our internal list, which has 20 other factors that are not in the course. So every once in a while, we'll find a nugget that the course won't find. But most of the time, it ends up being the same exact cities, right? So we don't like ever tell people go out and pay $25,000 to CoStar for this data. We do it because it's our job. We're, you know, obviously protecting people's money. We have a $1 billion portfolio, but we don't recommend that anybody else pay that kind of money because it ends up being the same list of cities. So yeah, there's a list, and we update our list quarterly. But on our website, we have a separate webinar. It's called Real Estate Trends. And it doesn't just have the cities. It's got a lot of other trends that you need to pay attention to. So we talk about the top 10 trends of the year, what's really driving profit, and how exactly is this trend creating profit for real estate investors, right? Our goal always is we want to jump onto a trend about 18 months before it goes mainstream. And we want to jump onto a city about 12 months before it goes mainstream. We don't want to go in too early into a city. We want to go in at, you know, 12 months before everybody else. But for trends, we want to give ourselves more time, so 18 months. So in that webinar, which is called Real Estate Trends, that comes out in January every year, we basically highlight the top trends, and then we also highlight the top list of cities. So the laziest way to get an annual list of cities is just watch the webinar each year, right? And I'll pick cities. I'll give you my dark horse pick. I'll give you my best city pick. Usually the best city and the dark horse picks are larger cities. But in the presentation, I talk about some of the smaller cities that I invest in. So I'll give you today some of my favorites. And you probably either have never heard of these cities, or you've maybe just heard of them, but you don't know anything about them, right? So my favorite city in the US to invest in today is Idaho Falls, Idaho. And most people are like, potatoes. Well, my data science says Idaho is and has been for the last 4 years the fastest growing state in America. So it's either Idaho or Utah that are the fastest growing states each year, right? So right there, you were like, something switched in your head because you were thinking Idaho potatoes. Now you're thinking Idaho, fastest growing state in America. Ooh, that's cool. Because anybody can Google that and figure out the fastest growing state in America, right? Just type that in, hit enter, you'll see Idaho right there. So that changes your mindset immediately. But now I'll add in other pieces of information about population growth. Well, you know, all these Californians, if they don't want to move to, let's say, Texas, they want a cooler temperature. Well, where are they going? They're going to Boise, Idaho. And so you're like, yeah, but Neil, you didn't mention Boise. Yes, because data science shows that the secondary city in a market is a huge beneficiary of all the growth in the primary city. So for example, Tucson is much more profitable than Phoenix. Colorado Springs is much more profitable than Denver, and Idaho Falls is much more profitable than Boise.
Oh, that's fascinating. That is really, so how did you come across that? That was raw data came across your desk and you said, okay, now we have to look at Idaho Falls.
So what we do basically is we spider the web, you know, so we spider the Zillow website, we spider the And you don't have to do any of this. The course gives you kind of public data, but we want something that's a little more fresh. So we spider a bunch of websites like the Census Bureau website, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, because jobs are obviously one of the biggest reasons to invest into a city. New jobs, fresh jobs, right? So while we look at population, we'll look at like last 10 years, 15 years. For jobs, we only look at the last 12 months because jobs are momentum. Remember, there's two ways of investing in stocks. There's the Warren Buffett method, which is value. And then there's something known as momentum, where the stock may not be good, but its momentum is upward, right? Well, in our data science of real estate, momentum is jobs, whereas everything else, population growth, home price growth, income growth, those are all, you know, that's the Warren Buffett kind of value investing. So we want to look at both of those numbers. So we teach that in the course itself. But whenever we take this information and we apply it to different cities, it becomes very, very obvious to us that some cities are much better than others. I'll give you more. And again, you don't need me to invest in these cities. It's just easier to work with us. But anyone can go invest in these cities. The other thing that we learned through the use of data science is we would rank a bunch of cities. And then we'd notice that there was a bunch of cities coming up in almost next to each other in our rankings that were fairly close to each other. And we discovered that the most powerful effect in real estate is not cities. It is corridors, and they run along freeways. So now we've defined our top five corridors in the US, and each year, you know, we define new corridors, and some of the old corridors become less powerful as more and more people enter into those markets and prices go up. So I'll give you examples of corridors. The most powerful corridor in America right now, the one that makes the most amount of profit, runs from the city of San Antonio and then runs through two cities called New Braunfels and San Marcos, small cities, and then ends in Austin, right? So, and it's a 81-mile corridor, right? So you might say, so, but you are talking about the cities. Yes, but our data science shows that neither Austin nor
San Antonio
are where the profit is. The profit is in the two little cities in the middle because they're getting compressed, right? So there's pressure from above, from Austin, and pressure from below, from San Antonio, both of which have lots of profit. So if you want to be lazy, go invest in these two cities, you'll do really well. But the pressure from those is impacting the smaller cities. And as a percentage, the values there spike the most. So New Braunfels and San Marcos are much more profitable than the other cities, because everybody knows that Austin is, you know, a supernova, right? With, you know, Elon Musk constantly talking about, you know, Austin. There's just not enough people looking at the smaller cities. I'll give you another example, like of a great corridor. So it runs in Florida and it starts north of Orlando, right? And so a lot of people are like, oh, Orlando's a great place to invest in. And then the corridor runs through Orlando and then it basically sort of runs north to south, or I should say east to west, and runs through a city called Lakeland, which most people don't know about. But from Lakeland, husband can drive to Tampa for work and wife can drive to Orlando. So it's a nicely positioned. It's compressed by the fact that it has commute capability to two massive metros, Tampa and Orlando. And then the corridor turns south and then it starts to run, you know, south of Tampa, and it goes through a bunch of cities like Bradenton. It goes through Sarasota and then it ends in Fort Myers and Cape Coral. That's where the corridor ends. So these little cities, like there's lots and lots of little cities, you know, below Tampa. And so between Tampa and Cape Coral, Fort Myers, that have astonishing profit potential. So we publish these corridors because we find that the money is often not in the superstar city because someone's already made that money ahead of you, right? So when you're buying there, well, you're making money for the last guy. But when you're buying in the smaller cities, the profit's still ahead of you. So you're still, you know, able to monetize that profit. So we create enormous amounts of profit using these kinds of methodologies, these kinds of corridor numbers.
So it sounds like you went from raw data, from web crawling, to essentially spreadsheet matrix to map is yes. How you translated it. And then you got to a place where it was visual and you go, okay, well, this is the area that we're going to be searching for.
Exactly. Or maybe I can give you different steps, but it was like, okay, I went from having a collection of cities that people told me about. You know, somebody said, you know, Houston's a great place to invest in. So I'd go do my math and see if Houston was doing well compared with other cities. And I was like, if it's really at the top of my list, then I should look into it. But then I started noticing that if there was a cluster of cities at the top, then the effect was even more incremental. it wasn't just a boost. It was a boost on top of a boost. So right now, Idaho Falls, Logan, Utah, Ogden, Utah, and Boise, Idaho are in a cluster. So everything inside a cluster gets a double boost, right? So San Antonio, San Marcos, New Braunfels, and Austin are in a cluster, and so is the city of Killeen, which is north of Austin. So when people come to me and say, I want to invest in Austin, I can't find anything. My answer is, why are you looking in Austin? Why don't you go buy something in Killeen? And they're like, yeah, but Killeen is like 60 miles away from Austin. And I said, what's the most profitable place in the San Francisco Bay Area to invest in? And they're like, I don't know. And the answer is, it's Fairfield. And Fairfield is 67 miles away from the San Francisco Bay Area. It's had the highest profit. It's had the highest incremental growth. Don't look at dollars. Always look at percentage. Money is always to be made in percentages. Who cares if San Francisco grew $1 million, if that was 20%? If Fairfield grew 40% and that was only 200,000, you made a lot more money there than you did in San Francisco, which grew 20%, you know, and that 20% might have been $1 million when you're buying something really expensive. But always, always look at the percentages. So, you know, like, you know, right now people are very interested in Denver. And my answer is Fort Collins, right? You typically can't commute to Denver, but North Denver, you definitely can. But that effect is spreading outwards, right? Nashville is not as profitable as Knoxville. This is constant. We see this in our numbers all the time. The secondary city is the one where all the money is.
Let's talk about one of the 5 points that you mentioned. Home prices are a hot topic right now. Everybody has seen, you know, the stratospheric returns here and 20% year over year, you know, probably not sustainable. How does that tie into multifamily? Is this a direct relationship? Are you looking for markets where home prices are going up? And if so, what's the underlying reason why?
Sure. We love markets with very, very strong home price growth because we have an 18-month crystal ball in multifamily. When home prices in a market peak, you don't want to be buying there because they've just peaked, right? So if Tom thinks that a market's peaked, he's going to move on, correct? We, on the other hand, will move in because it takes about 18 months for, you know, prices to peak. And when they peak, they don't necessarily mean that the price is going to go down from that point onwards. Usually what it means is the growth will slow down. So the, you know, next year, this city might only have a 6% growth where last year it had 20, right? Which is much more common than prices actually declining. So for me though, it's awesome because when the city becomes very unreasonably priced, that's when I want to buy multifamily there. Why? Because when a city becomes unreasonably priced and the people living there simply can't afford to buy a home, what is their other option? Their option is at some point, each month, a certain number of thousands of people in that city just give up on the dream of homeownership. That American dream of homeownership is simply not for them anymore, right? So either they move out of that area, which is why a lot of people are moving from Austin to Killeen, right? So that secondary effect gets created, people moving from Denver to Fort Collins, so they do it that way. Or the primary effect, which is they are like, okay, we're not going to buy a home. We've tried for a year. It's just simply not working. Home prices go up much faster than my salary or my ability to finance a home. But now that I've missed out on the dream of homeownership, I want to live in a nice place. I want to rent, but I want to live in a nice place. And that's what I do. I buy a property and I upgrade that property. I go from, you know, plastic countertops to, you know, something that's granite, and I'll upgrade all of the other stuff in the property. I'll make it look very nice. I'll improve the amenities. I'll refresh the parking lot. And all of those things lead to people wanting to live there. Now, for the last year, I haven't done much of that, all of the things that I just described, because I'm finding that multifamily has become overvalued for the most part. You know, you're paying at certain dollar numbers for a 70s or 80s property where I can basically just add 30% on top of that, and I can build my own. So currently 70% of my portfolio is based in these cities that you've never heard of, where I'm actually doing new construction. And eventually every city gets to the point where its rents are high enough for new construction properties to happen. And that has happened dramatically in the last 24 months. The number of cities in the US that were new construction capable has at least doubled in the last 18 months alone, as rents everywhere have gone up. You hit that threshold where, you know, rents are high enough for you to do new construction. So I've been doing a ton of new construction, and I'm combining my favorite trend, the trend that shows the most profit, which is build to rent, and I'm combining it with my favorite cities, cities you've never heard of, like Idaho Falls. When I combine two trends together, I get a lot of safety. So one of those trends could slow down. One of those trends could, you know, come to a halt because interest rates are going up or whatever. But because there's also an underlying trend, I am still very safe. So by combining a very powerful trend, which is, you know, a 10-year trend with data science, I get both the speed benefit in terms of, you know, profits going up high, and I also get the safety.
Okay, guys, what a fantastic first part to that series with Neil Bawa. Always a pleasure to talk with him. It's such an insightful character and very data focused, which I can appreciate in a world like multifamily investing. So very happy to have him. We'll be looking forward to having him back next week for part two. So look out for that there. If you're interested in investing with us, check out digcapital.com. Thanks, guys. See you next week.